Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots with Mary Jo Fahey. Greetings, Nick Curto. How are you?
Never better, Hercules. And I got to say, I am jumping up and down. Mary Jo has outdone herself tonight.
Yes,
this is
so
going to be a packed program. Packed program.
I'll be here listening. If you need me, just holler.
Okay, great. Well, again, this is Nick Curto, and I'm the co-host along with...
I'm Mary Jo Fahey, your other co-host. Together, Nick and I founded Disclosure Network New York, and DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th year of providing 2 meetings a month throughout the year. We've had to stop our meetings in person, face-to-face in Manhattan, since the venue we had been using is closed due to COVID-19. Until the venue reopens, we now produce all of our meetings on Zoom for our supportive DNNY members.
Our Zoom meetings are held on the first and the third Wednesday nights from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time each month throughout 2021, and that's going to be extended into the following year. If you would like to have some details to be a supportive DNNY member, please email me and I will give you that information. I'm going to give you my email address to contact me, and that is nicknyny1, and the one is the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, at gmail.com. Once again, it's nicknyny1 at gmail.com.
Our motto right from day one is connecting the dots to see truth. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, paranormal phenomena, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of areas and topics, doing deep research into these exciting and sometimes misunderstood areas that are the mainstream corporate press will very seldom talk about or disclose. In other words, who or what is behind the curtain?
Our members do intensive, investigative, deep research into these various topics and share that information with our group at our Zoom meetings twice a month and with our internet followers on YouTube. Both carry our recorded DNNY programs. Well, it's a great way to catch up on what you've missed if you have missed one of our meetings, and it's, a lot of people use that. Also, please visit our website. It's beautifully designed. Thank you, Jim. The website address is www.dnny.info. I'm going to repeat it, dnny.info.
We also have available to our DNNY members worldwide a daily news blast email service focusing on the most important topics of special interest. By becoming a DNNY member, you will then be connected to our other members receiving cutting-edge daily news that has never been more intensive as right now, plus our meeting announcement details, as well as invitations to special events year-round.
Well, let's get right to it. Mary Jo, please tell our listeners what the program is about tonight.
Oh, tonight, Nick, the topic is about famous classical sculptures and elaborate architectural buildings all over the world that were not carved from quarried stone. And, Nick, we're really going to connect a lot of dots tonight.
I bet we are.
This was not the original topic that I had planned for tonight's show. My original talk was going to be about 11 geometries used to build ancient buildings. Recently, on May 29th, we did a separate show about the Platonic solids with Hercules for his Space God series. And in that show, I mentioned that I had found a scientific paper that describes 45 geometries used to make nanoparticles, including Platonic, Archimedean, Catalan, and Johnson solids, as well as more than 10 arbitrarily shaped solids that include symmetric and asymmetric shapes. The first two, Platonic and Archimedean, are in the group of 11 used to build ancient buildings. The third is the golden mean, and my plan was to talk about these three and mention the other eight that are very advanced. The overlap in the two lists indicate that there has been an advanced presence on Earth for a very long time. Tonight's show is about an advanced cement used to create what we have been told are carvings from stone that is quarried. But in actuality, the stone is made from a mix, molded and not carved. To explain, I need to begin by making some connections to information that was presented in previous shows. I will also explain how I found this information and the information that supports it.
Mary Jo, I just got to interrupt for a second and say that when you said about molding and not carved, you blew me away. You absolutely did. I have to say, shocked at the findings that you have for tonight.
Tonight is, I think, one of the most shocking of content that we've ever done, because there's so much of it on Earth, and the data and the clues that it's correct are there, and that's what I'm going to present. On January 2nd, 2020, which was our first podcast, and then again on January 31st this year, 2021, on Hercules, on his special show that he has for his Space God series, we talked about archaeologist Sir Arthur Evans, who spent his career on the Greek island of Crete. We also talked about advanced plumbing found at the palace at Knossos that Evans described as equal or in some ways more advanced than our own, that was 1,000 years old when King Tut was laid in his tomb in 1324 BC. So that is, on both of those shows, there is the first piece of evidence that, you know, the ancients were very, very advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And in our show with Hercules, we talked about the distance between the palace at Knossos and the Greek city of Heracleion, where there's a museum. And the distance is about 3 miles. And I'd like listeners to remember the details about Arthur Evans, the plumbing and that he discovered and how old it is. And then in March and April 2020, we did a two-part series on artificial intelligence. And in that show, I explained that the word smart relates to nanotechnology. I also mentioned that the Platonic solids that Plato described in 350 BC, and that a nanoparticle is dodecahedral. The dodecahedron is one of the Platonic solids. There's five. And in research I did for later shows, I discovered that the nanoparticles can also be icosahedral, and that both of these solids do not exist in nature. There's five altogether. Three of them do exist in nature, and two do not. In the March show, I mentioned also, this is an important news story that I discovered. It was published in 2017 about a group at the City University in New York who rearranged atoms in graphene to form diamine that's harder than diamond. Graphene is made from graphite that is made from petroleum coke. Now, we're all familiar with graphite because it's in lead, which is in lead pencils. Now, remember this story because it's information about rearranging atoms that will be helpful later. In the March show, I also described smart building materials used in architecture, in medicine, and in surveillance. I was prompted to research nanotechnology used in architecture because I have suspected that the Great Pyramids at Giza were built with a nanoassembler described by author K. Eric Drexler, who I talked about in the March 2020 show and again in June 2021 in the show on nanomedicine. On May 29, 2021, we did our extra show with Hercules about the Platonic solids that I've mentioned, and a lot of the content was about nanotechnology. I explained that although Drexler is considered the founder of the field of nanotechnology because of a book he wrote, he did not originate the concept of nanotechnology. An American theoretical physicist named Richard Feynman introduced the concept in a talk he gave at Caltech in 1959 called "There's Plenty of Room at the Bottom." And in his talk, Feynman suggested that it should be possible to make nanoscale machines that arrange atoms the way we want. Remember what Feynman said about nanoscale machines and rearranging atoms. At this point, I want to say that I believe that the ancient cement is made from an advanced rearrangement of atoms. So
okay,
let's
hold your horses just a second, because that's a very important statement you just made, that mm-hmm. the ancient cement is made from an advanced rearrangement of atoms. So how in the world did that happen? That just blows me away right there.
They did it at the City University, at that news article in 2017. They made mm-hmm. a material that was stronger than diamond. And what this says is that the ancients had technology that we just have not been told about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think of them as having less technology than we do, but they have, you know, and as I talk about more of this information, modern scientists are saying that the cement from these ancient monuments is actually much more durable than modern cement. So this is
information. And that is a game changer. That is absolutely a game changer. What you're saying here, I've never, ever read or heard anything like this. So this is incredibly exciting.
It's kind of strange, too. It's really, really strange. In April, May, and June 2021, we did a three-part series on nanotechnology, including bioprinting of body parts in April, ancient nanotechnology in May, and in that show we talked about the Lycurgus cup, the Damascus saber, and the rose window at Notre Dame Cathedral that all contain nanomaterial. Now, the source for this is our government's website called nano.gov. So it's real, and those things have, they know that they contain nanomaterial. And the third show on nanotechnology was on nanomedicine, and that was in June. So mm-hmm. let's fast forward to research for this show. I found a blog post on a site called Science-Theory titled "Uncovered: The Secrets Behind the Stonework of Ancient Masons, Part 1," published August 10, 2019, and written by a man who does not use his own name. He refers to himself as Corbin Dallas, who is the taxi driver played by actor Bruce Willis in the film The Fifth Element. And when you read his blog, you understand why he used a pseudonym. He says famous classical sculptures such as Michelangelo's Pietà and elaborate architectural buildings all over the world were not carved. The gown in the Pietà and other statues are so delicate and complex that the stone would break. His blog has photos, and the sculpture that he uses that is the most convincing is in Naples, Italy. It's called Disillusion by Francesco Chiarolo, who lived from 1704 to 1762. There's a fisherman in the statue covered with a fish net that would be impossible to carve. And I placed a photo in the show notes. The Corbin Dallas blogger says famous work was created with softer materials such as clay, wood, or soft stone like soapstone, and then coated with a geopolymer slurry that hardens and looks like marble or other stones. This, he says, is the work of advanced chemists. The Corbin Dallas blogger article is a must read. He presents a large amount of detail and he uses a lot of important terms. The page also has several photos. Our listeners can Google the title of his blog, which is in the show notes. A huge shock occurs when you search for scientific studies and other articles to substantiate the Corbin Dallas blogger's information. The subject is related to nanotechnology and synthetic stone. Let's do a little bit more review from previous podcasts and connect some more dots that will help. In the January 2nd, which was our first show, and also August 15th, 2020, I mentioned I had found information about synthetic basalt manufactured in Mesopotamia. I came across a 1998 article published in Science Magazine and archived in the National Library of Medicine titled "The Manufacture of Synthetic Basalt in Ancient Mesopotamia." The article says the process required 2,192 degrees Fahrenheit. The August 2020 show was about Pharaoh Thutmose III, who commissioned Cleopatra's Needle, originally built in Alexandria, Egypt, in 1450 BC. It took 2 years to move the obelisk to New York's Central Park, and workers positioned it upright on January 22, 1881. The photo on the cover of that set of show notes, August 2020, has a bust of Pharaoh Thutmose III, and it is made of basalt. It looks carved, and it also looks quite perfect.
I just want to insert here, Mary Jo, that just a very short distance from the Cleopatra's Needle, which is in Central Park, right in back of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, is the site of our DNNY picnics that we do all summer. And we sometimes go to that obelisk to take another look at it. It's quite splendid. They recently cleaned it, and it looks almost brand new. Interesting to note, though, that on one of the sides, more exposed to the weather elements in winter than the other three sides, it is fairly worn down. It's very noticeable, and I'm just, again, but it looks like it was one solid piece of amazing granite that was carved. So, again, we have to take a closer look at this now.
Well, considering it was made in 1450 BC, it's in great shape considering how old it is.
Absolutely. You got a good point.
You know, okay, on April 18th, 2020, I mentioned a professor at the Mathematical Institute of the Serbian Academy of Sciences and Arts who explains that the dodecahedron and the icosahedron do not exist in nature. He provides a very, very technical explanation that I haven't included in our podcast because it's very, very hard to understand. I explained how research I did for another project turned up information for the April 2020 show. The other project was a detailed history of Wisconsin for a friend of mine who was moving to Janesville. I found information about a plasma fusion reactor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and further research into other schools with plasma fusion reactors turned up Princeton's Plasma Physics Laboratory, or PPPL. And their website says the reactor is used to for nanosynthesis at lower temperatures. An important story about Wisconsin that never made it to the April 2020 show is my story about Janesville that I've placed in the high drive with all of our show notes. The information is in book form, and the second chapter is about dodecahedral diamonds found in 9 counties in Wisconsin, described by a Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. Now, dodecahedral diamonds means that diamonds are not found in nature, which means they're synthesized. Also in my Janesville story, there's information about Cecil Rhodes, who founded De Beers Diamonds, and a New Yorker magazine article published on January 27, 2020, about a company that claims to have broken the De Beers hold on the diamond market titled, "The Woman Shaking Up the Diamond Industry." There's a lot of detail about the search for diamonds, including a description of lilac-colored magnesium-rich garnets in kimberlite pipes called indicator minerals. And it turns out that garnets are also dodecahedral. The New Yorker magazine published a story, and that publication is extremely respected. They may have been duped when it came to this particular article.
Yep.
On May 29th, 2021, as I've mentioned previously, we did a Space God show with Hercules, and we talked about the Platonic solids. We know that the dodecahedron and the icosahedron shapes are used to make nanoparticles. And as I've mentioned, I described a scientific paper that says there are 45 geometries used to make nanoparticles. For listeners who want to read the paper themselves, they can find the 2016 Science Magazine article by Googling the title, which is Designer Nanoscale DNA Assemblies Programmed from the Top Down. So let's make some connections to the Corbin Dallas blog. Incidentally, the title of his blog ends in part one. I never did find a part two, but we really don't need it because there is quite a bit of startling information in the part one. The first term I would like to talk about from the Corbin Dallas blog is porphyry. Porphyry is the hardened slurry that appears to be chiseled rock. Geologists use the expression porphyritic granite, which implies that granite starts out as a hardened slurry. When you Google the question, what ancient monuments are made of granite, a site called classicgranite.com says the ancient Egyptians used granite in the construction of obelisks, burial chambers, monuments, and columns. A Wikipedia page about porphyry says it is an igneous rock formed through the solidification of magma or lava. This may be a partial truth, since the Corbin Dallas blogger says statues and other synthetic structures start out covered with a slurry that hardens. The page says porphyry was popular in ancient Rome. Further down the Wikipedia page, there's a ROMB, R-H-O-M-B, porphyry that contains embedded rhombus-shaped phenocrysts. When you look up the word rhombus, it refers to a diamond shape. Now, Archimedean solids are 3D solids that are much more complex than Platonic solids, which mostly means they have more faces. And there's a special one called rhombo-dodecahedron. I heard rhombo-dodecahedron mentioned at the very end of an episode of the Big Bang Theory. The four scientists were quizzing each other about the number of faces in a rhombo-dodecahedron, which, as I said, is an Archimedean solid. Apparently, the show's writers know about the Archimedean solids. Our listeners can look for a YouTube clip by Googling Episode 2, Season 8 of The Big Bang Theory, titled The Junior Professor Solution. The spelling of rhombododecahedron is in the show notes, and if you Google the name with the word photo, Google will provide pictures. Now, dodecahedron is in the name, which means that porphyry is synthetic, yet we're led to believe that it was quarried. The Wikipedia page has a paragraph that says, all of the porphyry columns in Rome, the red porphyry togas on busts of emperors, the porphyry panels in the revetment of the Pantheon, as well as the altars and vases and fountain basins reused in the Renaissance and dispersed as far as Kiev, all came from one quarry, and it's Mont Pofrites. When you look this up, it is the mountainous side of a group of ancient quarries in the Red Sea hills of the eastern desert in Egypt. A website built by a stone company in Montana called QuarryWorks has an article titled Porphyry, Imperial Stone of the Roman Empire, that says porphyry is now quarried in Italy, Argentina, and Mexico. The article says porphyry is very durable and was historically used for paving. The company is located in Gallatin Gateway, Montana, and they sell porphyry paving stones, which they must know are synthetic. One of the first searches I did after reading about porphyry in the Corbin Dallas blog included the Greek island of Crete. I wanted to know if the palace at Knossos, where Sir Arthur Evans spent most of his career, had any artificial stone. When I Googled the word porphyry and palace at Knossos, Crete, the Archaeological Museum of Heracleion was returned. If you recall, I asked listeners to remember that Heracleion is a city 3 miles from the palace at Knossos, which is part of that archaeological site where Evans worked. The museum has a photo of a reddish-brown object described as a pyramid-shaped porphyry weighing 29 kilograms with an octopus relief and an attachment hole. The caption says it was probably used for measuring and certifying copper ingots, and it's dated 1500 to 1450 BC, and I put a picture of it in the show notes. The museum's dates are probably incorrect because it's probably much older. Next, I wanted to search for any information about synthetic basalt. This is strange because the minerals that make up this synthetic basalt come from the moon. The Wikipedia says basalt fiber is a material made from extremely fine fibers of basalt, which is composed of the minerals plagioclase, pyroxene, and olivine. When I did a Google search on the names of the three minerals and the word dodecahedron, a link to the table of contents page to a lunar source book was returned, published in 1991 by Cambridge University Press, and Chapter 5 is titled Lunar Minerals, and it includes information about plagioclase, pyroxene, and olivine. Our listeners can find the page by Googling Chapter 5, Lunar Minerals, Lunar Source Book. Dodecahedron and icosahedron show up in searches about lunar minerals related to basalt. Remember what I asked listeners to remember about Richard Feynman. He talked about nanoscale machines that arrange atoms the way we want. Also remember the news story about the researchers at City University who rearranged graphene to form diamine. Modern scientists call porphyry a geopolymeric concrete. Geopolymers, such as porphyry, are referred to as cement. Ancient cement, as I mentioned, is considered much more durable than modern cement. This is described in a December 1987 scientific paper titled Ancient and Modern Concretes, What is the Real Difference?, published by a journal called Concrete International. The author is Joseph Davidovitz at the Geopolymer Institute in San Quentin, France. The article's abstract or summary says, many observers of ancient architecture are struck by the vast difference in quality between original structures and more recent repairs. Recent studies have attempted to determine why ancient mortar and concrete are so much more durable than their modern counterparts. Many of these materials have been found to be geopolymers, which have been replicated and may prove to be an appropriate concrete for many modern purposes. And then on other modern concrete, I found an August 2020 paper titled 3D Printing Concrete Materials Containing Nano Calcium Carbonate, Workability, Strength, and Microstructures, published in a journal called Frontiers in Materials. It describes 3D printed cement that contains nano calcium carbonate, abbreviated NC, and it was written by three Chinese co-authors in Guiyang, China. Now, at this point, I want to mention that what happened when I switched the topic for this show from the 11 geometries over to this ancient cement, and what I did with the show notes was I combined them. In other words, I put the original notes together about the 11 geometries used to make ancient buildings, and so there's actually two shows in one in tonight's notes. And at this point, I want to ask Hercules how much time we have, because I could just go over a few highlights from that topic, which is the 11 geometries.
You have over 20 minutes. It's like 25 minutes.
Okay, good. Let me just go then over a few highlights from that other topic, which is also it's interesting that there's 11. And they overlap. The geometries used to make nanoparticles overlap with the ones that are used for ancient buildings. Now, what happened is that I was recently working on a writing project about classic molding, such as the molding sold at Lowe's, baseboard molding, picture molding, and several other forms of trim molding. There's a lot of it in New York City because the buildings are so old. And I came across an article titled The Purpose of Classical Molding, written by a man named Eric Evans, and it was published on October 15, 2018. And he mentions the Platonic solids. And that was what I was intrigued, because I was thinking about, here's a man who knows about classical architecture, and he mentions Platonic solids in his article. He says that he actually teaches a class on classical molding. He says that the architectural molding is no longer taught in contemporary architectural and interior design schools. He's an instructor for the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art, or ICAA, in the Southern California chapter. And he teaches a class which is designed to familiarize students with the rationale and the use of architectural moldings. And the ICAA site has a list of all the chapters in the country. He explains that moldings are linearly extruded from Platonic solids, and pragmatically, he says, they are used to conceal or embellish intersections between adjoining surfaces. So it was his mentioning of the Platonic solids that I decided to dig deeper into the subject of ancient architecture to see what I could find. And I came across a website by a group of architects called Thor Architects.
Hmm.
And their article is titled 11 Classical Geometries in Architecture. And it was written by a man named Gungeon Thor Erlandsson. And he lists the following geometries that are used in classical architecture. I would just like to read them. The first is the 5 Platonic solids, then the 13 Archimedean solids, the golden section, which is also called the golden mean. He says it is considered to have a mystical and aesthetic quality that's used from the ancient Greek architecture to modernist like Le Corbusier. Also the Fibonacci numbers, projected geometry, piling, tessellation, periodic tiling, aperiodic tiling, also known as Penrose tiling, origami, ruled surfaces, Gothic, and the last one is combination. The Thor Architect site is very beautiful, and the article includes photographs of buildings that are based on the different geometries. Our listeners may know that Thor was Enki's son, and the Sumerian Society.org site says that Enki's Nordic name was Odin, and Thor was his son. What happened was, when I found Gungeon's list of the 11 geometries, I continued to search for examples of buildings that were built with the geometries, and some surprises turned up. When I searched on the question, what are Archimedean solids used for, a link to the Britannica for Kids site turned up. Here is an excerpt about the Archimedean solid called cubo-octahedron. 2 triangles and 2 squares meet at each vertex. This is called a cubo-octahedron. Archimedean and Platonic solids are used in various kinds of modern construction, such as geodesic domes, because their shapes are quite stable. And then I kept searching, and our listeners may know that Buckminster Fuller is accredited with designing the first geodesic dome, and the show notes has a little bit about him and the an author named Paul Coulter, who is an artist. He also is a visiting professor at Dartmouth. He wrote an article about the Platonic solids used in the ancient world as well as the Renaissance. And then I put together some information about the golden section. And it's the 3rd geometry on Gungeon's list on the Thor Architect sites. And it's represented by the Greek letter phi, which is the 21st letter of the Greek alphabet, mathematically equal to 1 divided by 0.618. And the ancient Greeks used the golden ratio to determine pleasing dimensional relationships between the width of a building and its height. I then found an interesting article by an author named Gary Meisner, and he has a website called goldennumber.net and an article about the golden section in famous architecture. And this is interesting. He lists the following structures that were built with the golden section: the pyramids, the Parthenon, Notre Dame, the Taj Mahal, the United Nations Secretariat Building, and Toronto's CN Tower. A site called Math Central says that Leonardo da Vinci used the golden ratio when he drew the Mona Lisa. And then the notes just end talking about a topic which I've mentioned before, which is artificial intelligence and author Nick Bostrom and his book Superintelligence, all about the type of AI that is self-learning and the warning that Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Stephen Hawking gave in 2015 that AI may bring about an end to humanity. So that's as much as I have on that, which is in the show notes, and people can look and refer to that. You know, Nick, when I was preparing and printing up some of this information this morning, the fact that synthetic basalt has those lunar minerals, I thought about Stephen Greer's press conference that he had in May 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the witness that I thought about was Carl Wolf. He was the one who gave the testimony about the base on the other side of the moon. Do you remember that?
Right. Yes.
And, you know, I found a video. There's a website that lists the five most frequently viewed Greer videos. And there's a that original press conference is now over 20 years old because that was filmed in 2001. And then we formed the chapter later that year. But there's a video, if people type in, and it's very interesting, his account of how he was at the time a technician that repaired photography equipment, and he was in the service, and he was at the Air Force, and he was called to the NSA to fix some photography equipment, and he was there in a room with a man who had his same rank, and he explains that they both had security clearance, but not anywhere near. I guess he was allowed in because they really needed his skill to fix the equipment. But he says there's an above top secret clearance, and then beyond that there's something called crypto clearance, which he did not have at the time. But this man that he was alone with said, I'd like to show you some pictures, and it was the pictures of this base on the other side of the moon that were taken by the lunar orbiter. And viewer video that his interview, you know, in other words, he can spend much more time explaining what happened that day than he was able to do on the day that Stephen Greer organized like a dais at the Washington Press Club. And Carl Wolf was only able, they were each given a certain amount of probably limited time. And he got up, and they took turns going to the microphone and telling their story about their experiences with UFOs. And his testimony was this story about the base on the other side of the moon. And so if you Google Carl Wolf, he spells his name with a K, K-A-R-L, and Wolf has an E on the end. I found this newer video by just typing his name, Greer, and NSA, and you can easily find it. I would recommend everyone take a look at that. It's really rather chilling, actually. He said it when he saw the pictures that day, he said it was rather frightening.
I'm going to do that, Mary Jo, right after this program ends, because this is really, I am, because I'm on the edge of my chair. I got to tell you, this is one of the most exciting programs we've ever done. Thanks to you and your deep research. It also opens up huge amounts of questions here, huge. And the connecting of the dots, which you have done amazingly well, also then leads to other questions, as you can imagine, about much more about how did this take place, who's in back of it, where is it now, and who decided what was going to be released and what was going to forever be kept secret from the public. These are questions that really need to be answered because this really is a game changer on so many levels. Just a quick note, I know we're getting close to the end, but I mentioned to you earlier when we were talking on the phone that there's been a lot of research into the fact that the statues that we see in Rome and in Greece, those incredible statues, were all pure white. And, of course, when you go to the museums like the Met, there's incredibly big rooms with all these amazing statues in pure white. And I always thought, well, the museum must have just cleaned them because obviously these are so old. There must have been a lot of dust and dirt and everything else on the surface, and they did such a good job. But then I started reading articles that said that actually when you take a microscope, and certain museums have done that, and go just underneath that white, there turns out to be paint, because the original statues were not white. They were technicolor, skin color, and then for the togas and the different kinds of clothing that they would wear and the sandals were in the various colors of the actual objects. And
amazing.
I never knew that. And it was just very surprising because when you go to a museum, you assume that you're seeing it as it originally was viewed. And that's not true at all. I mean, that was quite amazing. Also, I just learned recently that there, I believe one of the museums, and I'm going to have to research this, actually has an exhibit where they've taken the statues, reproduced them, and then did them in color as they would have looked to the people who originally saw these new figures. I mean, I would be very interested in seeing more of that, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Not only that, but they had animatronic specs then, too. There are accounts surviving of in Alexandria, which was Greek Egypt under the Ptolemies. They had animatronics. So they had moving statues, and they also had coin-fed drink dispensers, and they had doors that opened, like when you go to a supermarket or someplace else, and the doors open, they had those as well. So there was a lot that they had back then that we never even learn about in modern accounts.
I was reading some of that material, and again, it blew me away. I never dreamt that was actually part of what the real scene was way back then. Mary Jo, I have a question. When we have meteors that crash into our planet, could the ancients have taken those meteors? Could there have been other particles in the meteors that weren't found in our own planet? Could they have used that in some way?
Well, the origin of occasionally you come across these scientific papers that say that, you know, this they believe was formed on other planets or stars, and it's. But then when you dig deeper, like the fullerene is an example. Fullerene is an example of a nanoparticle, and they say that it's not from Earth. It's just not natural. So, but yet they do sort of hint that it's, you know, somewhere else, you know, from another part of our galaxy. But they don't really go into too much detail. Is that what you meant?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, that would be one way to explain that some of those compounds might have come from huge distances by way of meteors crashing into the Earth that were found maybe ground or used in some of this technology. That's just a guess. Another one, of course, is that our friends from starships that we know visited the planet and still are, and or here, a lot of our Disclosure Network New York members absolutely have agreed that is happening right now, that these were then technologies very far advanced that were given to the peoples of our planet way back when. Again, that's just so exciting. I mean, think of that, and think of the implications of another civilization giving us those, I will say, gifts, because they were. So again, it opens up so many doors. Exciting material here.
You know, on the subject of this advanced concrete, I'm wondering if these things can be, you know, these ancient structures like that Cleopatra's Needle, for example, or any of these other ancient, even this material that was found on Crete, if it can be analyzed, you know, if it can be investigated to see, chemically to see what it's made out of.
Oh, absolutely. I think it absolutely requires that to happen, absolutely needs to happen, because these are, again, pivotal questions.
It's not quarried like they say that it is. I mean, they're sticking with that story because of this modern company in Montana that says it comes from a quarry, and it does not. It's a chemist. It's a chemical, the slurry that then hardens.
Well, also, I just wanted to go back to what you said because it's so pivotal. You mentioned a photograph, and I saw that in your notes, and it's a fisherman with a fishing net, and mm-hmm. it looks like it was all carved, but the net is so fine, you're thinking
right.
there's no way in the world that
right.
fishing net could be chipped. It couldn't have been. So what are we looking at? Well, what if that was originally a real net that they dipped into this substance and then formed it on the statue and let it harden? Could
That's
that
what
be
I think happened.
What we're looking at?
I think you've hit it right on the nail. I think that must be what happened because you're right, that's so delicate. There's just no way because it's a huge net. It's a big, huge fishing net.
Yep. And it's also three-dimensional, and some of it is layered. So how in the world could they get anything to chip into something behind another part of the net? That would be absolutely physically impossible.
And also, maybe that's what they did also with the fabric, you know, like on the piazza. You know, they may have dipped it.
You know, I was thinking of that, too, because I've always marveled at how realistic the foldings of these fabrics are on the classic statues and how beautiful
yes.
it is, so
yes.
artistic. And I'm thinking maybe they had a little secret and used it marvelously well, but could that have also been used to affect the incredible draperies that we're seeing on the statues?
Mm-hmm.
How interesting is that?
It would explain it so much realistically than you know, somebody chiseling it with tools.
This is so exciting. I'm going to, when they lift the band at the Met, when you can go in there without being vaxxed, which now you can't go in, I would like to go very close to those statues and relook at them with perhaps a new eyes, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
a new eyes of what we're looking at. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I definitely agree. I'm sorry to hear that they did that new rule about the Metropolitan with the vaccine.
Yeah, they're turning away anyone who doesn't have a card that says that they've been taken the jab. And that is, well, again, it's what they decided thanks to the New York mayor, but this is really, I think, a little way overkill, way too much, and they're going to. I think there's going to be a lot of repercussions from those kinds of rules. But anyhow, that's a different show. But again, Mary Jo, the research here is absolutely thrilling. And again, I was on the edge of my chair. And when we're finished in a few minutes with this podcast, I'm going to my laptop and do some more serious research because you have propelled me. You really have.
This is why I switch. I mean, 11 geometries was intriguing, of course, because there's, you know, 11 geometries, just like those
mm-hmm.
45. But this about the cement and the ancients, you know, this is why I moved the subject over to the this ancient material, because it's so startling.
What I want to do now before the time goes any further is just tell our listeners, and thank you so much for listening to our program tonight. If you'd like to contact either Mary Jo Fahey or myself, Nick Curto, about any comments you might have or ideas or questions, you can do that by emailing me at my email address, and I will answer them, or if it's for Mary Jo, certainly give it to her. I'm going to give you my email address once more on the program, and here it comes, NICKNYNY1, and that's the numeral one, not the O-N-E, the numeral one, at gmail.com. One more time, NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. And we welcome all inquiries, of course. How much more time do we have?
Almost toward the end. 3.5 minutes, yes. I want to thank you both. That was a great episode, very well researched and very well presented, and another piece in the jigsaw puzzle that you've been putting together for us, Mary Jo.
quite a puzzle it is.
Yeah,
quite a puzzle. You know, I'm going to have my college reunion tomorrow, and I went to art school, and at the reunion there's going to be several people who are sculptors, and I can't wait to give them this information that Mary Jo has uncovered for us, because I think you're going to get a lot of oohs and ahs when they start hearing this new information. I am sure they've never heard of this ever before. All right, well, I guess what we'll do then, Mary Jo, is go to our final statement. So with that, again, what an exciting program. Thank you so much. And so this is Nick Curto.
And Mary Jo Fahey for Connecting the Dots, wishing you all an enlightening journey.
As you connect the dots to seek truth.
Till next time, keep informed, stay healthy and safe.
And be very, very kind to one another, never more than right now. Goodbye. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Goodbye for now.
Bye. Thanks again, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you clicked on a link, made a phone call, or however you found yourself here, or whether you'll be joining us later on demand at your leisure. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventure, and we're going to close with Lynell Griffin's Mighty Elohim.
Trump.